So he goes on to talk about the fact that this man, many times we talk to a new man, watch his hopes rise as he discusses the alcoholic problem, explain our fellowship, but his face falls when we speak of spiritual matters, especially when we mention God. Oh, I am self. You don't have to beat me up. I've already done all that, you know. For we have reopened a subject which our man thought he had neatly evaded or entirely ignored. That's me. We know how he feels. We have shared his honest doubts and prejudices. Some of us have been vilely anti-religious. To others, the word God brought up a particular idea of him with someone who tried to impress upon them during childhood. In my drinking days, God, this is crazy. You know, they used to say, in your drinking, there's certain topics you ought to stay away from, right? Those are the ones I like to talk about. They'll always start a fight. I've had barroom fights over God, just drunker in hell, you know. Perhaps we rejected this particular concept because it seemed inadequate, that this God is inadequate. Wow. When that rejection, we imagined we had abandoned the God idea entirely. We were bothered with the thought that faith and dependence upon a power beyond ourselves was somewhat weak. This is Bill's old ideas about God. He's writing to you about himself here. Even cowardly. The book will stop talking about alcohol on page 45. It's no longer going to talk about alcohol anymore. It's going to talk about the solution to the problem. So he goes on to say, we look upon the world of warring individuals, warring theology systems, and inescapable calamities with deep skepticism. We look askance at many individuals who claim to be godly. Oh my God, I'm telling you. Anybody know, there's a preacher on Jimmy Swagger. He has a famous cousin who's a piano player. Jerry Lee Lewis, you got it. And they were raised together. One becomes a preacher and the other says, I'm going to hell playing this piano if that's what it takes, you know. And this guy got up there one day and he's got tears in his eyes and his wife, I don't get a lot of time for TV, but I just happen to click it on and there he is. And I love that kind of, I love a good firebrand and Pentecostal Baptist preacher. If you've never heard one, you're missing, man. They're just great, you know. I mean, they just stomp up and down. Anyway, he's making an amends to his flock, to his television flock. And the problem that happened to him was that he got caught with a prostitute. And he's in there asking forgiveness and praying, and they got his congregation going for him, and he has fallen short of the glory of God, and oh, how bad he is. Problem is, 6 months later, he got caught again. What's really wrong with this man? He has no power. That's the only reason I bring him into this. He has no power to overcome himself. And he needs God's power. And that's where we sit with this thing. We should be convinced by now that we have to have this power. So how could a supreme being have anything to do with it at all? Maybe he doesn't. Might put that in your mind for a while. And who could comprehend a supreme being at all? I can't. Anyhow, yet in other moments we found ourselves thinking when encountered by starlight, who then made all this? There was a feeling of awe and wonder, but it was fleeting and soon lost. Albert Einstein said the world's too mathematically perfect to be an accident. For him, that was the power greater than himself. We are not in a... This power you're going to find belongs to you and to you only. God is a personal experience. We'll get through that. It says this is an experience you must not miss. Yet we have, of agnostic temperament, have had these thoughts and experiences. Let us make haste to reassure you. This old idea is a bill. And what he's going to say now is he's going to give you a set of promises. It said, we found that as soon as we were able to lay aside prejudice, which is a condition, and express even a willingness, a condition, to believe in a power greater than ourselves, we commenced to get results. What a wonderful promise. Just that alone, just to be able to turn loose long enough to give something else a try. That's not easy. This is not simple, but not easy, because it hits at your very core. Even though it was impossible for anyone to fully define or comprehend the power which is God, I tell you, I'm not a very smart guy. And I don't mind being not a very smart guy. It kind of pays off for me not to be a very smart guy. Sometimes dumb guys get a lot out of life that smart guys don't get. Anyway, when I think about that for a second, and you look at our book, and we talk about Carl Jung, the psychiatrist, pretty smart guy. He calls this thing a phenomenon. He does not understand it. Smart people don't pretend. He doesn't pretend to understand it. It's a phenomenon, an unexplainable happening. He has no rational way to explain this to you. Dr. Silkworth says, "Bill, I don't know what's happened, but it's better than what it was before." No rational explanation for this thing. There isn't any rational explanation for this thing. If you could explain it, your name would be God. So there's no way to explain the world of the Spirit. And what we do here is we get caught in the world of the world and the world of the Spirit. And this is a program in which you need to get all the way in if you want the maximum benefit of this program. So he goes on, "Much to our relief, we discovered we did not need to consider another conception of God. We're not an orthodoxy like a church would be. If you go to the church, they're going to tell you what God looked like, what he talked like, how long he carried the cross on his shoulder, how many steps he made, what he had to go through, and all those things. Nothing wrong with any of that. I know what I am. I'm a fundamental Protestant Christian. I know what I really am way underneath." So he said, "We discovered we didn't need another concept of God." So your own concept, he says, however inadequate, because if your concept of God at this moment in time and your mark through this world that you're trying to make on this path we're trying to follow was sufficient, you would not be here. Does that make sense to you? All right. So my God, my idea of God was inadequate when I was a 7-year-old boy. It was inadequate. Was sufficient to make the approach, which is step 3. He's leading you to that third step decision here. And he does it in a way that is tremendously inspiring. I don't think he's bright enough to write this by himself. And to effect, 4-9, to effect, 4-9, a contact with him. God is not lost. Work the solution, 4-9. I guarantee you, you'll find him. As soon as we admitted the possible existence of a creative intelligence, now he's not even going to use the word God. He's going to go to the guys that were like him, who that word God just made him mad. And it made him mad when Eddie gave him God, but he could accept other things. A spirit of the universe underlying the totality of things. We begin to be possessed of a new sense of power, step 1, and a direction, step 2, provided a direction, took other simple steps, 3-12. Okay? We found beautiful promise. We found that God does not make too hard of terms with us who seek him. If I got what was coming to me, never would have made it. God loves me, as our 7th step says, take all me, the good and the bad, and he takes me exactly as I am. To us, the realm of the Spirit is broad, roomy, and all-inclusive, never exclusive or forbidding to those who earnestly seek. Key word, earnestly, a condition. Do I earnestly seek? It's a beautiful promise. He is giving you everything he's got here to lead you on into this new life. It is open. We believe. And I'm going to add the women, so all men and women, children, dogs, cats, anybody else, really. Promise. Oh, here's an old idea. When therefore we speak to you of God, we mean your own conception of God. It's the only way you can have it. You can't have my conception. You can't have my program. And I can't have yours. Even though they're very similar. You must get your own experience with God. Does that make sense? Your own experience. That's all that counts. This is an experience you must not miss. And I'll show you a little more about how we do that. We mean your own conception of God. This applies too to other spiritual expressions which you find in this book. Do not let any prejudice you may have against spiritual terms deter you from honestly asking yourself what they mean to you. So Dr. Bob, at 16 years of age, says, I don't want to go to church anymore. Now, he had a good Bible education. His daddy taught Sunday school for 42 years. They said, okay, don't go to church anymore. At the start, this was all we needed to commence spiritual growth. You don't need much at the start. What do you need? At the start, this is all we needed. What did he say you needed? Do not let any prejudice you have against spiritual terms deter you from honestly asking yourself what they mean to you. What does it mean to you? Not what I say it means, what it means to you. It don't make any sense. I've been listening to people all my life that tell me what it means to them. But it didn't mean that to me, and I'm having trouble. Oh, I can dress up like the rest of them can. I can get my suit on, go down to church. I could never sing very well, but I could mum the words, you know, just open your mouth, look like a singer. I looked up when they looked up. I didn't know what they was looking up at. They looked up, I looked up. They put up their hands, I put up my hands. They looked down. I had nothing touched me like this book did. The other thing I talk about sometimes is I say to people, God did not redeem me in church. He redeemed me here. And when he did redeem me here, I believe I need to stay here. There's nothing wrong with, I love church. I go to church all the time. Wilson went to church all the time. A lot of people go to church all the time. One of my guys called me up at 10 years of sobriety. Him and his wife said, we decided to go to church. And I said, that won't hurt you none. Keep one foot in AA and one foot in church, and you can't go wrong. You know. Because Bill will tell us later in step 11, go to your priests, your ministers, your rabbis. Get books and read them. And we're just a kindergarten here. So at the start, this was all we needed to commence spiritual growth. To affect our first conscious relationship. Do you understand what that implies? Means talking to God. Conscious relationship with God as we understood Him. After we found ourselves accepting many things which seemed entirely out of reach, I guarantee you this was out of reach when I got here. This was not my plan. I did not think I was coming up here to Pollock Pines along with Mike and be asked to present the big book for alcoholics. I've been doing it for years, but I'm always surprised when somebody says, well, you come over to do a book study for us, you know. That was growth, he said. That's growth within the past. And I'm going to grow here. And if you're standing still, if you're giving the first chair that you gave 20 years ago and you're still giving that same chair today, you haven't grown none. You need to put your growth in there. So when I come and do these things, if you listened to me years ago, oh, the printing of the book is right, but my personal growth within the program is grown by leaps and bounds. But if we wish to grow, we begin somewhere. So we had to use our own conception, however what? My own conception of God is absolutely limited to my self-centeredness. And I will lock myself, and we're going to read a line here in just a few minutes that talks about that. I'm chained to these old ideas and I won't let go. And God won't make me let go. I have to let go of my own free will. We need to ask ourselves but one short question. Here's your question. This is all it takes. Do I now believe, or am I willing to believe, that there's a power greater than myself? Step two, done. There's no magic here. Done. He lets you go right on through. You can get the rest of the program. You can come back to step two later. But all you need to do to move to step three is, do I believe or am I willing to believe? And I am. That's one of those conditions I told you about. I am willing to believe. As soon as a man can say he does believe or is willing to believe, we in fact assure him that he's on his way. It has been repeatedly proven among us that upon this simple cornerstone, a wonderful and effective spiritual structure can be built. You see that arch I gave you the other day? I told you where the pages were, and we're building that arch. He's building the foundation, and like anybody knows here, if you don't have a fine foundation, your house is going to come down. And you need a foundation in Alcoholics Anonymous that cannot be turned. This was great news for us, for we had assumed we could not make use of spiritual principles unless we accepted many things on faith which seemed difficult to believe. My faith is in my experience with God. I'll give you a little chance to think about things a little bit. So I keep my God stories in the front of my book, and if I begin to feel a little like I want to do some thinking, I move over to the front of the book, and I said, you didn't think up any of this stuff, pal. I will give you some of those as we go. I'll give you one now. My second wife, the hardest amends I ever made was to my second wife, and I'd married a woman while drinking I didn't love. We were together for quite some time, about 7 years, and I knew she wanted to be married, so one day in a jovial mood, we bought her a diamond ring and we got married. And then at 11 years, she helped me get sober, and she was part of Al-Anon, and she did a hell of a job and probably saved my life. And then I do owe her something. But I had married a woman I didn't love. The worst thing you can do in the world is to marry somebody you do not love. Let me tell you why. Because you block them from finding anybody that might love them. And that is so painful because you break the security instinct. When you break the security instinct, it's everything. And we'll see that in the fourth step. So she leaves with the cash crop and the new Cadillac. At the time, I was building a business called American Legal Centers. I was going to make it this time. And it looked good. It was a statewide corporation. I was the CEO. I had a card that said so. I've had cards that said lots of things. I've been bankers. You can be doctors, brain surgeons. You can be anything. Nobody down at the place where you get the card made cares whether you got credentials or not. So you just go have the card made, and then when you feel it really big and you get all dressed up with your pinky diamond ring so you look like everybody instead of the dumbass that you are, you get you a whole bunch of money in your pocket, and this is called bait, in case the girls don't know about it, and only sick girls would know about this. And you wrap a bunch of $100 bills around this pile, and you carry it in the front pocket all the time, and you go up to one of the places like Top of the Mark where the drinking wheel goes round and round, and they have a guy in there in the men's bathroom. It'd be a great place for a meeting. It's all in granite, and it's really big. The girls have never been in there, I'm sure. But they brush you off, and you have to have a tie. You get all dressed up, and so you go out there, and what you're doing is you're hustling. And you bring out your wad of money. And of course, the only person that is impressed is the other hustler who's trying to find some money. And then you get out hustled, and you really don't take that very well. There's nothing like a thief who gets stole from. He really gets mad. But this whole journey that I'm on, I ended up one day, and we dealt with it. I'd owed the government $26,000 in my, we'd gotten that straightened out, and somebody said, how can you owe $26,000 in taxes? I said, easy, make a lot of money, don't pay. It's real easy. And, so I've been through, I'm building to a story here. I've been through negotiations with the IRS, which can go on for months and months and months and months and months. It can be very, it'll drive you nuts. And so when she left, I ended up owing about, I don't remember what, $8,000. Some reason I ended up owing $8,000. And I'm living on $700 a month, and I'm living in my office or an office building that I manage. And I'm paying a woman $25 a month, and I call it my year in the desert. So one day, I'm on the phone. I get this phone call from the IRS, and they're off, you know, God only knows where they're from. And they're talking to me, and they're asking me a bunch of questions, and I went dead broke here, in sobriety, dead broke. And I had money when I could lie, cheat, and steal, but boy, I went dead broke when it got past that. And living an honest program stuff. And so anyway, I've got this thing going, and I'm talking to this guy, and he wants to know, do I have a car? And I said, yes, I do. I have a 91 Cadillac. And he said, can you get a loan on it? I said, nobody would loan you any money. The thing's probably worth $1,000 maybe, you know. Nobody's going to give you any money on an old car. It's a great car. It's only got 87,000 miles on it. It's a God car. It's a little gift that came from God. So anyway, I said, do you have any bonds? No. Do you have any stocks? No. Do you have any real estate? No. That's all gone. Alcohol took it all. And some of the women I was married to, they got their part. And I'm glad they did. They earned it. Let me tell you something. So they go and say, well, we're going to send you out a letter, and we're going to have you sign the letter and make this a statement, and da-da-da-da-da-da. And I said, okay. I told them how much I make, and I make, by that time I'd retired, I was on Social Security, and I make, with a small pension, about $1,178 a month, and I pay rent where I am. I thought, Sweetie and I stay together, we won't fight over money. And so, I'm telling this guy all this stuff. So, here comes the deal. I don't want to fill it out. There's an 800 number to call. I call it. I get a guy in Washington, Saddle of Washington, I think it is. And we get on the phone, and I give him my Social Security number, and I hear him running that computer, and he comes up with, your name is Donald Dean Brown. You worked for Safeway in Oklahoma City when you're 16 years. If you don't think they know about you. That's the first time Social Security ever got paid. Here it was. Here's my whole work record. And we're talking, and the voice comes to me, and it tells me. See, being powerless is hard, because everything, my instincts want to do one thing, and my God wants me to do another. And so we're talking, and I said, could you excuse me just a minute? And he said, oh, Don, don't worry about it. Most people go broke, you know, don't be ashamed. He's trying to console me. I said, no, there's something in me wants to tell something in you. And he goes, can you imagine somebody saying that to you on the phone? I mean, just think about it for a minute. Not only the IRS, just somebody calls you up and says, I got something in me, wants to tell something in you. You go, what kind of nut have we got on our hands now? You represent who, you know? So finally he said, okay, tell me. I said, if I were you, see, I'm not so self-centered anymore, and I had your job, I'd look at that work record, and I'd see large amounts of money over the years. And I'd have to wonder why a man who made that much money over the years doesn't have any. Maybe he's hiding his assets. He said, it's crossed my mind. I said, I need to tell you why that's that way. You should tell me. I said, I'm an alcoholic. And alcohol took everything I ever had or ever loved. Have you ever seen a guy get hit in the belly or been hit in the belly and all the air goes out of you? All the air went out of that guy. He went, ah, I could hear him on the other end of the phone. And I knew something was coming back. I've been doing this for a long time. I knew something was coming back, but I didn't know what. And like he, dead silence on the other end of the phone. He's like grabbing for breath, you know. And he comes back and he said, Don, when was your last drink? And I knew that I was talking to another alcoholic. Nobody would ask you that question. And I told him, I was a little ahead of him. He said, I came off of Skid Row 5 years ago. And we had the quickest settlement you ever saw in your life. I wanted to get off the phone. I had a winner. He said, stay. He said, Don, this is ridiculous. It's a waste of the government's time. We allow $1,330 at your address. That's what we allow for people to live on. You're below that. You're not collectible. This is my this is my number. This is my desk. I'm sending you a letter. Anybody that calls you, refer them to me. This is over with. Took 5 minutes. I don't know what to tell you about that. You figure that out. You figure that out. But everything in me cried and said, don't say nothing. When people presented us with a spiritual approach, how frequently did we all say, I wish I had what that man has. I'm sure it would work if I could only believe as he believes, but I cannot accept as surely true many articles of faith which are so plain to him. So it was comforting to learn that I could commence on a simpler level, old ideas. Besides the seemingly inability to accept such much on faith, we're going to read the spiritual experience a little bit. We often found ourselves handicapped by obstinacy, sensitiveness, and unreasonable prejudice. Many of us have been, see, those are your blocks. You get it? Those are blocks to God. Obstinacy, sensitiveness, and unreasonable prejudice, blocks to God. I'm chained to those old ideas. Many of us have been so touchy that even a casual reference to spiritual things made us bristle with antagonism. I've heard many of people come into AA and they say, some old time say, don't talk about God, you run them off, you know. Well, let me tell you, if you're not ready to talk about God by the time you get here, you better go get ready. Because if that runs you off, alcohol will bring you right back, you know. I always tell people that. This sort of thinking has to be abandoned. And I can't do that without God's help. Oh, God, please help me abandon these ideas. Please help me get out of self. Self can't overcome self. Though some of us resisted, we found no great difficulty, I promise, in casting aside such feelings. Why? Because faced with alcoholic destruction, step one, we soon became as open-minded on spiritual matters, step two. That's all he asked me to do. He don't ask me to do anything, but just be open to it. Just listen to it. As we tried to be on other questions, in this respect, your alcohol was a great persuader. It finally beat us into a state of reasonableness. That's all the reason I got here, not because of you kind and loving people. I didn't even care about you kind and loving. I'm too self-centered for that. The flamethrowers on the cheeks of my butt was alcohol. Made me sit in that seat when I didn't want to sit in that seat. Made me listen to people that I examined as idiots. How could they say that? No, Jesus Christ. Sometimes this was a tedious process. We hope no one else will be as prejudiced as long as some of us were. Pain, I wrote in there. Pain brought me here. The problem, the reader may still ask why he should believe in a power greater than self. We think there are good reasons. Let us have a look at some of them. Solution. The practical individual of today is a stickler for facts and results. Nevertheless, the 20th century readily accepts theories of all kinds. Our book is not a theory. It is based in experience. That's why it works. Provided they are firmly grounded in fact. We have numerous theories, for example, about electricity. Everyone believes them without a murmur of doubt. Why this ready acceptance? Simply because it's impossible to explain what we see, feel, direct, and use without a reasonable assumption as a starting point. Well, let me tell you, I can get mad if I turn the light switch on and it don't come on. Now, I have no idea. I'm not an electrician. I'm an old plumber is what I am. Well, really, we like to step ahead. I'm a steam fitter, but that's a class above plumber. We like to think ourselves about. Without a reasonable assumption as a starting place. Well, I've done a lot of things, like a lot of alcoholics. I've done a lot of things in my life. It's amazing how many things we can do. I don't have a clue. I mean, I know where the fuse box is. I know this current travels in, and it comes in the house, and it's broke up. And I know when you hit the light switch, and I know how to change the light bulb, some of those things. I know what it feels like when you're drunk and you come in the house and somebody's taking the light bulb out of one of those deals. And you're fishing around for it and you're so drunk you can't figure out it and you stick your finger in it and you go, whoa, yeah, there's no light bulb in there, boy, you know. Has to get shocked. That's about the way everything I do has to be. But I have no idea how electricity works. I could not have to get an electrician. There's one over here. He could tell you how electricity works. I don't know a thing about that stuff. I can tell you how it hurts. That's another story. Everyone believes that without a murmur. Why this ready accept? Because it's simply impossible to explain what we see, feel, direct, and use without a reasonable assumption as a starting place. They're phenomena to people. Everybody nowadays believes in scores of assumptions which there's no good evidence, no perfect visual proof. And does not science demonstrate that visual proof is the weakest proof? It is being constantly revealed as mankind studies the material world that the outward appearances are not inward reality at all to illustrate. And he's trying to tell you that this world of spirit, unless you give it a chance, you'll never know. The Poseidic Garden is a mass of electrons whirling around each other at incredible speeds. See, it looks solid, but it's not. But don't try to run your hand through it either. These tiny bodies are governed by precise laws, and these laws hold true throughout the material world. Well, who created those laws? I mean, there's some questions here that ought to come up for you. Well, where'd that come from? Science tells us so. We have no reason to doubt it. Whenever the perfect logical assumption is suggested underneath the material world and life as we see it, there is an all-powerful, guiding, and creative intelligence. Right there, our perverse streak comes to the surface and we laboriously set out to convince ourselves it isn't so. Ha ha! Isn't that funny? It's not so. I don't say that about the electric light, but I'll say that about God. we read wordy books and indulge in windy arguments. Man, you hear them and they every reason why, you know. Thinking we believe in this universe needs no God to explain it. Were our contentions true, it would follow that life originated out of nothing, means nothing, proceeds nowhere. It reminds me of an old girlfriend I used to have. Her and I, we had that kind of a relationship. Yeah, she did nothing for me, I did nothing for her, and together we did nothing for each other. It was all we had, you know what I mean? Instead of regarding ourselves as intelligent agents, spearhead of God's ever-advancing creations, it's easier to believe that for me than it is to believe there's no God. We agnostics and atheists choose to believe that our human intelligence was the last word, the alpha and the omega, the beginning and the end of all. Rather vain of us, wasn't it? If I'd have had one more good idea, I'd be dead. That's the kind of mind I've got. Here's some more ideas by Bill. We who have traveled this dubious past beg you to lay aside prejudice, a conditional word, even against organized religion. We have learned that whatever the human frailties of various faiths may be, those faiths have given purpose and direction to millions. Absolutely true. When you find bottom, it's that part that everybody goes to, not just alcoholic people. That everybody finds powerlessness somewhere, someday, somehow. Oftentimes it's in the hospital when a loved one is dying and there's not one thing you can do about it. And the doctors can't do it. $2 billion hospital, they can't do anything about it, and they come out and they tell you. And you just go crazy because you can't accept powerlessness. There's got to be something else. Somebody can do something. And I'm absolutely without power, and we hate to feel that feeling. It is scary to feel the feeling of no power. I want power. Why? I want to be God. I want to control my life. I want to control your life. And that's what we're going to get to with the actor after a while. People of faith have logical ideas about what life's all about. Actually, we used to have no reasonable conception whatever. And I wrote in my book, True About Don, years ago. Absolutely true about me. We used to amuse ourselves by simply dissecting spiritual beliefs and I'd love to do that. God, I'd like to do that. That's wonderful. I just like I could do any better. When we might have observed that many spiritually minded persons of all race, color, and creed were demonstrating a degree of stability, happiness, and usefulness, which we should have sought for ourselves. What is my problem? I have a double standard. I got a standard for you and a standard for them. I'm a hypocrite. And what that makes me is a liar. And I cannot keep a relationship with God based on a lie. My God demands rigorous honesty, page 58. Instead, we look at human defects of those people and sometimes use their shortcomings as a basis of wholesale condemnation. If you're looking for a relationship and you're looking for Miss Perfect and Mr. Perfect, you'll never have one. I can show you my perfect for about, no, it's according to how long I can hang on to it. It won't hang on very long. We used to call them airless dates, you know. Sometimes use their shortcomings as a wholesale combination. We talk of intolerance while we were intolerant ourselves. Double standard. We miss the reality and beauty of the forest because we were diverted by the ugliness of some of its trees. We never gave the spiritual side of life a fair hearing. In our personal stories we find a wide variation in the way each teller approaches and conceives of a power which is greater than himself. It's the only way he can do it. You can't have mine, I can't have yours. But I want to tell you something. I honor yours as being precious, precious stuff. Whether we agree that with a particular approach or concept seems to make little difference. We have people at AA wants to be an orthodoxy. They don't understand. Experience has taught us that these are matters by which, for our person, we need not worry. They are questions for each individual to settle for himself. And that's what Michael's telling you this morning. On one proposition, however, these men and women are strikingly agreed. Every one of them has gained access to 4-9 and a belief in 2, a power greater than themselves. This power has, in each case, accomplished the miraculous, the humanly impossible. So don't look to human aid. AA fellowship is human aid. A lot of good things here, but it's still human aid. will not replace the path to God, which is our steps. As a celebrated American statement put it, let's look at the record. His name was Alfred Smith, the Catholic who tried to be president. Here are thousands of men and women worthy indeed, step one. Two, they flatly declare that since they've come to believe in a power greater than themselves, to take, step three, a certain attitude towards that power and to do certain simple things, 4 through 9. There was a revolutionary change, 10, 11, and 12, the fourth dimension of life, in their way of living and thinking. I am not the same person sitting here today as I was over 21 years ago. If I were the same person, I would drink again. If I were the same person, my children would not call me on Father's Day. If I was the same person, my first wife and I would not get along. If I was the same person, all the people, I've made 250 amends over the years. I did it by letter because I had no money. And then I went out. The last time I made a big amends was at my cousin's reunion in Oklahoma. I hadn't been there for years. And I'm the oldest. My mother had died. And we're going to scatter our ashes on the farm, my sister and I. And my sister says, I would like you to, they want you to give your mother a little eulogy. And I said, I'm going to tell them the truth, sister. You might not like it. Said, they might not like it either. There was 57 cousins. I'm next to the oldest. And I said, you know, if I've ever harmed you or hurt you in any way, I want to tell you how sorry I am today. Like a big group deal, you know. And then I told them my story. They had not a clue. Not a clue. They did not understand what my mother and I and my sister were doing there all the time. All right. In the face of collapse and despair, in the face of total failure of their human resources, step one, I'm powerless over alcohol. My life is unmanageable. They found that a new power, peace, and happiness, and sense of direction flowed into them. These are promises. So I go from a wreck to a better way of life than I've ever known. It's a promise. This happens soon after they've wholeheartedly met a few simple requirements. We call them the steps. And the principle, each step has a principle behind it. We'll get around to that. Once confused and baffled by seemingly futility of existence, they show how they have showed the underlying reason why they have making heavy going of life. I don't know about you, but man, my life was tough every day. Every day. Leaving aside the drink question, they will tell you why living was so unsatisfactory. Absolutely. With or without drink, my life was unsatisfactory. They have showed how the change came over them, 3 through 12. When many hundreds of people are able to say that the consciousness of the presence of God is today the most important fact of their life, they present a powerful reason why they should have, why one should have faith. Many years ago, Nancy O'Donnell, who had 60-some years when she passed away, would say to people, "Your God's not big enough, borrow mine." The book suggests that if you don't have a God of any kind, use the group. It's not big on doorknobs or light bulbs, but it is big on the group. The group contains the solution, so you're pretty safe with the group. This world of ours has made more material progress in the last century than all the millenniums which went on before. Almost everyone knows the reason. Students of ancient history tell us that the intellect of men in those days were equal to the best of the day. Yet in ancient times, material progress was painfully slow. Why was it painfully so? The spirit of modern scientific inquiry, research, and invention was almost unknown. The realm of the material, men's minds were fettered. It means chained. Your mind is chained to self-centeredness. It is chained to not being open to anything but what you have. And it's hard to give me up. Because you asked me to give me up here. You asked me to give away all my life experiences and saying I've been wrong. And man, it's hard to say I've been wrong. And it's done by superstition, tradition, and all sorts of fixed ideas. Some of the contemporaries of Columbus thought around Earth preposterous. Well, if you were living in that day and the teachings of the smartest people in the world says, Isabella, don't give that man that ships and that stuff, because he's going right off the end, about 7 miles out there, he's going right off the end. We all can see it from here, we know it's flat. There's no way that, don't do it, you're going to lose your dope. He must have been a drunk, that guy. He didn't know where he was going. He had no idea what was going to happen. And he got a woman to finance the whole trip. Not only did he do that, he got her to do it twice. Others came near putting Galileo to death of astronomical heresies. There's nobody in this room today that believes the world is flat, I don't think. But in those days they did. And they were chained to that idea that it was flat. Mike and I was having a great talk coming up here about the Sutter's Mill and talking about gold and down around here. And he gave me some examples of people who did not know what they were looking for, and fortunes were made. The gold guys left and the silver was laid already mined. They made a fortune. Then some other guy come up with what kind of iron? Malibadium iron, a product that was laying right there on the ground with the rest of this stuff, and made another fortune. I mean, it's just something else. We ask ourselves, old ideas, are not some of just as biased and unreasonable about the realm of the spirit as were the ancients of the realm of the material? How will you ever know if you don't take the walk? Even in the present century, American newspapers were afraid to print an account of the Wright brothers' first success fight at Kitty Hawk. They wouldn't even put it in the paper. It took place, they didn't, no, we can't put that in the paper, they'll call us crazy, right? Had not all efforts at flight failed before, did not Professor Langley's flying machine go to the bottom of the Potomac River? Was it not true the best mathematical minds had proven God could never fly? No, excuse me, man could never fly? I overthink sometimes. Fortunately, I came along when people didn't believe that. There was a time, not too far, I was born in 1934, there's not too far before that, there were a lot of people who said things about if they wanted men to go to the moon, God had gave them wings. If they wanted men to fly, they'd have gave them, you know, they wanted them to, people that lived around us were called Mennonites. And Mennonites did not use power equipment. And so you would see them in their horse-drawn carriages, or you'd see them with their wagons coming to town. They're great people, great people. Had not people said God had reserved this privilege to the birds, only 30 years later, the conquest of air is almost an old story, and an airplane travels in full swing. But in most fields, our generations have witnessed complete liberation of our thinking, old thinking. Complete liberation is possible. Show any longshoreman a Sunday supplement describing a proposal to explore the moon by the means of a rocket, and he will say, I bet they do it. Maybe not too so long either. It is not our age characterized by the ease with which we discard old ideas for new, by the complete readiness with which we will throw away the gadget or theory or gadgets which does not work for something new which does. That's what he's talking about your life. Your life does not work. You're not happy, joyous, and free. And he's saying maybe you ought to throw them old thoughts away and try something new. We had to ask ourselves why we shouldn't apply our human problems the same readiness to change our point of view. Here is some promises. My sponsor calls these promises the promises to the agnostic. He said, we were having trouble with our personal relationships. No boy. We couldn't control our emotional nature. We were prone to misery and depression. We couldn't make a living. We had a feeling of uselessness. We were full of fear. I've had all this stuff. We were unhappy. We couldn't seem to be of any real help to other people. Was not our basic solution to these bedevilments? They're called the bedevilments also. More important than whether we could see newsreels or lunar flight? Of course it was. Amazing. Amazing. I love Alcoholics Anonymous. I sometimes I get into meetings that are so sick. guy I spotted sober about 17. He wants to talk about relationships. He'd been married 3 or 4 times. Anyway, that was the topic of the day, and I go to a meeting with a lot of time in it, and everybody that had a lot of time didn't put up their hand, but all these other people put up their hand. Right? Every hand that went up did not have a relationship but wished to discuss about how to get one. I could not believe it. I said to Happy Jack, who's sitting next to me, 34 or 5 years sober and married for many years, 30 or 30 years, I said, Jack, I wonder why they don't ask you. Yeah. Why don't you ask somebody who's got one? Jesus Christ. No, I want to tell you, I can't, you know. Oh, man. We just sat there and shut up, you know. So we saw others saw their problems by simple reliance upon the spirit of the universe. We had to stop doubting the power of God. That is one thing that the fellowship can do for people, is they see you and they see God, and you talk about God and God made the change. You're encouraging those people to move forward with you. Our ideas did not work, but the God idea did, and giving that up is tough. That is not easy. The Wright brothers' almost childish faith that they could build a machine which would fly as the mainspring of their accomplishment. Without that, nothing could happen. We agnostics and atheists were sticking to the idea that self-sufficiency would solve our problems. When others showed us that God's sufficiency worked with them, we began to feel like those who insisted that Wrights could never fly. I was raised by people in the farm areas who told you to pull up yourself by your bootstraps, go out in this world and make something of yourself. That's what they told me. My folks are just like a lot of folks that came here. Uncle Frank and Aunt Mary lost their farm in the crash of 29, and if you've ever read the book, I can't even think of the name of the thing now, Grapes of Wrath, if you ever read that book, that's exactly how they got here. They made it all the way to Pismo Beach, and that Model T truck, if it could have swam, that had gone further. It had all that stuff they wanted. Who listened to the Wright brothers could never fly. Logic is great stuff. We like it. We still like it. It is not by chance that we're given the power to reason, to examine the evidence of our senses, and to draw conclusions. Everything that ever comes to you comes through the 5 senses of the body and is stored in the computer we call the mind. This is one of the main man's magnificent attributes that separates us from other animals oftentimes. We ask them, God, what's wrong with me today? Agnostically inclined would not feel satisfied with a proposal which does not lend itself to reasonable approach and interpretation. Hence, we're at pains to tell why we think our present faith is reasonable, why we think it is more sane and logical to believe than not to believe. Why we say our former thinking was soft and mushy when we threw up our hands in doubt and said, we don't know. That's what an agnostic is. Atheist says, I can prove there is no God and here's why. The believer says, I can prove there's a God and here's why. And the agnostic says, I really don't know. And I will say I'm a believer, but I'll be practicing as an agnostic many times in this program. When we became alcoholics crushed by self-imposed crisis, we could not postpone or evade. We had to fiercely face the proposition that either God is everything or else he is nothing. God either is or he isn't. What is our choice to be? And I stand on the threshold here of a choice. Arriving at this point, we were squarely confronted with the question of faith. We couldn't duck the issue. Some of us had already walked far over the bridge of reason towards the desired shore of faith. The outline and the promise of the new land had brought luster to tired eyes and fresh courage to flagging spirits. Friendly hands had stretched out in welcome. We were grateful that reason had brought us so far. But somehow we couldn't quite step ashore. Perhaps we could leaning too heavily on reason that last mile, and we did not like the loss of our support. I'm so afraid. I'm just so afraid. And I can't, I only, sometimes spiritual experiences come right away, but spiritual awakenings come as a process of letting go of self over a period of time. And it comes from having experiences. And as you get the experiences, you get more faith in the experience. Does that make sense to you?
Mm-hmm.
I don't have blind faith. I do now because I've got a lot of experiences. So it said, it's called control. That's what it's called. Control. I want to be in control. That was natural, but let us think a little more closely. Without knowing it, have we not been brought to where we stood by a certain kind of faith? For didn't we not believe in our own reasoning? Oh my. I don't know about you, but I don't trust my reasoning worth much. It's called misdirected reasoning. Did we not have confidence in our ability to think? My sponsor used to say, you still think you can think. What was that but our sort of faith? Yes, we were faithful, abjectly faithful to the God of reason. So in one way or another, we discovered that faith had been involved all the time. One of the great lines in our book that talks about what appears to be a flimsy reed turns out to be the loving and powerful hand of God. When you come to AA and take a look at us, we don't look like much. We are underdressers. We meet in strange places. We talk strange stuff. You know, and a sick guy comes in the door and takes a look at us, and he says, oh my, this, I don't know. No, I need a psychiatrist. I need a better psychiatrist. I don't need this. And when he stays long enough, that flimsy reed that you look like turns out to be the loving and powerful hand of God. That's what you are. Isn't that wonderful? You're the loving and powerful hand of God. We found, too, that we'd been worshipers. What a bunch of mental goose flesh that used to bring on. Had we not variously worshipped people, sentiments, things, money, and ourselves? You betcha. And then, with a better motive, had we not worshipfully beheld the sunset, the sea, or the flowers? Or who of us have not loved something or somebody? I had a friend one time in Arizona, and he had a new girlfriend he was trying to impress from New York. And he was a painter for the school painter. And he painted cars in the backyard. Yeah, he's a nice guy. So he said, I want to impress this girl. I had a brand new Ford truck. And he said, I want to take her up into see the painted desert. Would you drive us up there? And my wife, I said, sure. So we had a great time. So they're running all over that. I don't know if you've ever been to the paint. It's quite a sight. So he comes running up to me and he says, if you don't like the cutter, I'll change it for you. Paint the desert he's talking about. He was a funny man. How much did these feelings, these loves, these worships had to do with pure reason? Little or nothing. We saw it last. Were not these things the tissues out of which our lives were constructed? Absolutely right. My life was constructed of tissues which it didn't take much to tear them up. Does that make sense? It didn't take much to set me off in just about anything. Did not these feelings, after all, deter the course of our existence, determine the course of our existence? Was it impossible to say that we're at no capacity for faith or love or worship? In one form or another, we've been living by faith or little else. If you're an alcoholic like me, you get up every day to go out and fight the world. You know. Imagine life without faith. There was nothing left but pure reason. It wouldn't be life. But we believed in life, of course we did. The key to living is simplicity. That is the key to a life, is simplicity. Keeping your life as simple as possible. We could not prove life in the sense that you can prove a straight line is the shortest distance between two points. Yet there it was. Could we still say that the whole thing was nothing but a mass of electrons created out of nothing, meaning nothing, and whirling on to a destiny of nothingness? Of course we couldn't. The electrons themselves seem more intelligent than that. My friend Dr. Mark says, you do not have to have the brains even, you don't have to have a brain bigger than a plant. You take a plant and set it up, and it will turn to the sun. It will turn to the power that it needs. And that's all you need. You know, we get this big intellectual stuff. At least so the chemist said. Hence, we saw that reason isn't everything. Neither is reason, as most of us use it, entirely dependable. Though it emanates from our best minds. No more. Morals are a standard of right and wrong. Immoral is a confliction within yourself about morals. I'm in conflict by will about my immorality. See, I know what's right and wrong. I've always known right and wrong. That's required here. If you don't know right and wrong, you're not honest. You may not have the capacity to be honest. And it talks about those unfortunate people. But 99% of the alcoholics I know or more are absolutely no right from wrong. I just don't have the power to do right. If that makes sense to you. What about people who prove that man could never fly? Yet we've been seeing another kind of flight, a spiritual liberation from this world. People who rose above their problems, step one. They said God made these things possible, step two. We only smiled. We had seen spiritual release, but like to tell ourselves it wasn't true. Actually, we were fooling ourselves, for deep down in every man, woman, and child, the fundamental idea of God. You want to know where it comes from? That's where it comes from. It may be obscured by calamity. That's part of your inventory work. By pomp, by worship of other things, but in some form or another, it is there. For faith and a power greater than ourselves and the miraculous demonstration of that power in human lives are facts as old as man himself. We finally saw that, part of our makeup as much as the feelings. We finally saw that faith in some kind of a God was a part of our makeup just as much as the feelings we had for a friend. Sometimes we had to search fearlessly through 3-9. But he was there. He was as much a fact as we were. We found the great reality deep down within us. The great where is it? In here. I'm at church looking up. I'm at church looking down. And all the time it's in here. I'm looking in the wrong place for it. In the last analysis, it's only there that he may be found, and it was so with us. We can only clear the ground a bit. If our testimony, speaker meetings, open meetings where we have people talk, our testimony helps sweep away prejudice, enable you to think honestly, encourage you to search diligently, these are conditions, 3-9, within yourself, then if you wish, you can join us on a broad highway. Steps 10, 11, and 12. That's the fourth dimension of life. It's the broad highway of life. With this attitude, a promise, you cannot fail. A promise. The consciousness of your belief, not mine, your belief, is sure to come to you. Deep down. And every man, woman, and child, that fundamental idea. In this book, you've read the experience of a man who thought he was an atheist. His name is Fitz Mayhew. His story in this book is on 497. His story is so interesting that some of it should be told now. His change of heart was dramatic, convincing, and moving. Fitz Mayhew, I told you the other day, lived about 8 years after he recovered. He never drank again. He is in the book and the story. You will see this. Wilson says that, and we'll look at that, and that his spiritual experiences in AA, about 10% of the fellowship get it that way, and 90% of the fellowship get it through awakenings over a period of time. And this guy got it like Wilson. Our friend was a minister's son. He attended church school where he became rebellious at what he thought was an overdose of religious education. For years thereafter, he was dogged by the trouble of frustration, business failures, insanity, fatal illness, suicide. These calamities and his immediate families embittered and depressed him. Post-war disillusionment, ever more serious alcoholism, intending mental and physical collapse, brought him to a point of self-destruction. He run out of him. He just couldn't go no further. He just run out of him. So when you run out of you, the way out is to die. One night when confined to a hospital, that's Towns Hospital, he was approached by an alcoholic who had known a spiritual experience, Bill Wilson. Our friend's gore, which means anger, rose as he bitterly cried out, "If there's a God, he certainly hasn't done anything for me." Or he's got that backwards. We'll see that a little later. But later alone in his room, he asked himself this question. Is it possible that all the religious people I've ever known are wrong? I'm so self-centered, you're all wrong, every one of you. While pondering the answer, he felt as though he lived in hell. I have lived in hell. I just refused to lay down and die. Then, like a thunderbolt, a great thought came. It crowded out all else. Who are you to say there is no God? This man recounts that he tumbled out of bed on his knees, to his knees, and in a few seconds he was overwhelmed by conviction of the presence of God. He's having a spiritual experience. Here are the promises. It poured over and through him with the certainty and majestic of a certain tide of flood. The barriers he'd built up through the years were swept away. He stood in the presence of infinite power and love. He had stepped from the bridge to the shore. For the first time, he had lived in conscious companionship with his Creator. Thus, our friend's cornerstone, the one we talk about, I gave you, fixed in place. No later vicissitudes have shaken. No problem ever came big enough to shake him from it. His alcoholic problem was taken away. That very night, years ago, all promises. It disappeared. Save a few brief moments of temptation, the thought of drink had never returned. Promise, at such times a great revulsion has risen up in him, and you'll read about that in step 10. Seemingly, he could not drink even if he would. God had restored him to his sanity. Whoop! If that ain't hot, I don't know what is. What is this but a miracle of healing? Yet, its elements are simple. One, circumstances. Power over alcohol. Made him willing. Two, believe. He humbly offered himself to his Maker, which is three. Even so has God restored, 4-12, us to our right mind. To this man, the revelation was sudden. Some of us grow into it more slowly, that awakening. But he has come to all who honestly seek him. Great promise. Those who honestly seek. When we drew near to him, he disclosed himself to us during the process. You don't have to worry about it. I want to finish now before we break for lunch, and I want to go to the spiritual experience because sometimes we forget to do that. And in the fourth edition is what, Mike? The book is structured 567 in the fourth edition, 569 in the third edition. Spiritual experience. The term spiritual experience and spiritual awakening are used many times in this book, which upon careful reading show that the personality change sufficient to bring about recovery from alcoholism and a new interpretation of old ideas. We're right back to the good doctor again. Sufficient to bring about the recovery of alcoholism has manifested itself among us in many different forms. I at one time thought that was God forms. Today I believe it's word forms. Yet it is true that our first printing gave many readers the impression that these personality changes or religious experiences must be in the nature of sudden and spectacular upheaval, the kind that Wilson had. Happily for everyone, the conclusion is erroneous. It's a mistake. Can you see two alcoholics sitting there with not too much time and some guy talking about a spiritual experience? And I turn to you and I say, how long you been here? And I've been here 2 weeks. How long you been here? I've been here a month. And did you have one of those? No. Well, we might as well get drunk. You know, it's not working. In the first few chapters, a number of sudden revolutionary changes are described. Though it was not our intention to create such an impression, many alcoholics have nevertheless concluded that in order to recover, they must acquire an immediate and overwhelming God consciousness followed at once by a vast change in feelings and outlook. Among our rapid growing membership of thousands of alcoholics, such transformations, though frequent, those are the experiences, about 10%, are by no means the rule. The awakening is more the rule. Most of our experiences is what the psychologist William James calls the educational variety, because they develop slowly over a period of time. Quite often, friends of the newcomer are aware of the difference long before he is himself. It is painless. The only pain that God does not create pain, I create it. I create pain by resistance. He finally realizes he's undergone a profound alteration in his reaction to life, that such a change could hardly have been brought by himself alone. Woo! What often takes place in a few months, how long? Don't limit the power of God by time. I see people do that all the time. Never limit your power of your God and your experience by anybody's time. It is your experience. God doesn't have any time. He is there as quick as you want Him. The only thing that's keeping you from doing that's you. They used to say down in Texas, if God's moved, if God's not anywhere around, don't forget who moved. You know, me. God's still around. A few months could seldom been accomplished by years of self-discipline. No way to get here but self-discipline. With few exceptions, our members find they attacked an unsuspected inner resource here and here, which they presently identify with their own conception of a power greater than themselves, a personal relationship. Most of us think this awareness of a power greater than ourselves is the essence of spiritual experience. Having that already in you. Our more religious members call it God consciousness. So we have a large spread here because we're not an orthodoxy in our description of what happens. Most emphatically, we wish to say that any alcoholic capable of honestly a conditional word, facing his problem, not just problem alcohol, in the light of our experience can recover, comma, end of thought. What a powerful statement that is, if you know anything about the history of alcoholism. If that conditional word provided, he does not close his mind to all spirits. He doesn't have to do anything. He don't have to say nothing. All he's got to do is just listen. He can only be defeated by an attitude of intolerance. I will not listen to you. Or belligerency. If you say it again, I'll have to hit you. You know. A promise. We find that no one need have difficulty with the spirituality of the program. Simple, simple, simple is the answer. But not us, man. Willingness, a condition. Honesty, a condition. And open-mindedness are the essentials of recovery. But these are indispensable, cannot be done without. These are the six conditions. And if these six conditions, through prayer, ask God for them, can be met, and you take the step, transformation takes place every time. God bless you, and we'll see you, I guess, after lunch.